Hi, everybody. This is Bob Goodwin, and welcome to another episode of Career Club Live. If you happen to be watching this on YouTube, please feel free to like, subscribe, and comment. We'd love to hear from you. Today's episode is brought to you by our newest service called Next Placement. If you're an HR professional faced with the unenviable task of needing to transition some employees, Next Placement is our innovation in the outplacement category, where we're bringing a more people-centered, empathetic approach to help folks as they move on to the next step in their career. You can learn more about Next Placement at career.club. So today, I am really pleased and privileged to welcome our guest, Anna Maria Sankovich. Anna Maria, or AMS as she's known, is the Chief Talent Officer for Royal Caribbean. And today we're going to be talking about how to bring clarity and simplicity to the critical function that HR plays, and back to being people-centric, how to make HR more about the people. Also, we're going to geek out on neuroscience a little bit. I think that AMS has got some really interesting perspective on how to tailor communications with a broad workforce so that they best resonate. So with that, AMS, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Bob. It's a pleasure being here with you.
No, it's so nice to have you. Now, where the heck do we find you today? That looks pretty in the background.
In Port of Miami, in lovely Miami, Florida.
Nice. Well, I hope you enjoy another beautiful day in sunny Southern Florida.
Here.
So as is our want, we always like to help folks just sort of get to know you as a person first. So a couple of little icebreaker questions. So where were you born and raised?
Born and raised in Romania, actually. And my parents and I moved here when I was about nine. Nice. Northeast first, and then down here.
Oh, cool. So this is the fun part about icebreakers is that I've got a friend who's got a pretty interesting development in Cluj, and I wouldn't know anything about Romania were it not for my friend doing some cool stuff in Cluj. So there you go. And where did you, so you came to the States, where'd you go to school?
All in or around Philly. So Bryn Mawr, Haverford, initially undergrad and initial grad, and then UPenn for business.
Nice. Very good. And just a little bit about your family.
Married with a Colombian. I picked up a little Spanish along the way, and I have two Colombianitos, both boys, 12 and 7. Living right outside of Fort Lauderdale.
Well, podemos hablar en español si quieres.
Podemos, pero no todo el tiempo.
Perfecto, gracias. All right, and then just a little bit, because you have a great job. Do you mind just painting a little bit of a picture of your career arc?
Absolutely. So I actually started out in asset management and kind of the world of finance, public equity, private equity, and then a little wealth management. And it was at the tail end of that, about the third of the way through my career, that I fell in love with all things people and change and transformation, and have frankly never looked back. And so I've been in and out of consulting and in-house in some area of talent, standing up, redesigning, transforming different parts of the talent function.
And how long have you been at Royal Caribbean now?
Pardon?
How long have you been at Royal Caribbean?
Oh, 6 months. Actually, almost to the day.
Awesome. Well, happy anniversary if it's close enough. And then and I'm really going to be interested to talk about some of these change management things and stuff that you're talking about. And then lastly, when you're not at work, what do we find you doing?
Running around to kind of wrangle the kids.
It's a couple of e-hosts around.
But otherwise, I devour kind of any and all things around experience and behavior. And I kind of geek out. So I wouldn't say like I have a hobby that in many ways is my hobby. That we can talk later about kind of how the personal intersects with the work. I'm not good at drawing those boundaries.
No, I think that's cool. Actually, one of the things that we can talk about is this notion of work-life integration. Sometimes people talk about work-life balance. And what that sort of implies is that they're in conflict with each other, and we're just trying to minimize you know, the disequilibrium between our private life and our work life. And one of our friends and collaborators is Dr. Andy Garrett, and he's the one that really taught me about work-life integration. That's really how flow state is, when they're working together, they actually compound each other in a positive way instead of...
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, so I think that's cool. So when we first started getting to know each other, just immediately one of the things that you started talking to me about was bringing simplicity and clarity to HR, and that we have this tendency to overcomplicate things. And, you know, so maybe if you want to just start there, I know that you've talked to me before about, you know, we live in a VUCA world, and sometimes you fall into all that. So go ahead.
Yeah. And in fact, I would say it's not even just an HR thing, because HR things should be business things to begin with. But I think that with the speed unfolding and ever present, and it's funny, I remember one time somebody saying, the world will never be as slow as it is today.
That's true. Yeah.
That world will never be as simple as it is today. And it's kind of daunting when you think about it that way, but it's very true, right? And so as things continue speeding up, I think it's just, it's becoming such an imperative to make sure that clarity is there. And oftentimes clarity comes along with simplicity. The more convoluted a message, the more things in the pipes to deal with, the greater the kind of, really the cognitive load is on us, the more we have to multitask, and we all know multitasking is a myth anyway, right? There's only so much that we can hold. Now I'm going into the neuroscience of it. There's only so much we can hold in our mind at any point in time, and there's only so much we can process. And so I think it's more of an imperative for leaders and organizations and managers and everybody and HR to simplify and to clarify and to hone in on what's the North Star? Where are we going? Why are we doing that? And to do so consistently, because there's just so much noise in the mix. It becomes so much more challenging to make the right decisions, to understand the real picture and the problems we're trying to solve, and kind of coalesce the team in the direction to do so.
So with the complexity part, how much of that is of our own creation and how much of it is external?
So I do think in HR and talent, we tend to want, I do think we often make it more complicated than it is. I remember way back when, this was like when I first started in the business world, you know, we're all like, and kind of, you know, like we're eager and we want to take on the world. And I just remember back then, certain concepts being so dissected and frameworked and two by twos. And as this is speaking as an ex-consultant, right? Like I love two by twos, but there's just so much unnecessary complexity. You lose track of the real picture. You lose track of like why we're here. You lose track of the humanness of things. And it doesn't need to be so. Just like, what are we trying to do at the end of the day? Even concepts like employee experience, you know, you can slice and dice, or engagement, and like, okay, at the end of the day, it's really pretty simple. Easier said than done, I know, but like, do people feel like they can show up every day as their whole selves? Do people feel like they can do their best work? Do people feel like they belong there and they're included and their voice matters, right? Like, and of course, those are touching about concepts that we already know and kind of are near and dear to us. But I just think sometimes we make it too complex, and then for ourselves, and then we get weighted down by, or kind of we have to hold up the weight of all of the systems and processes and check the box. And then we wonder why kind of people aren't as engaged as they could be.
I wonder, this might be really crass, so I apologize, but if sometimes the creation of all these processes is actually sort of job security. Well, somebody's got to keep all this stuff going, and like, look at all this, all these complex rocket systems that we've got here.
I've never come across people who I felt were creating those things for themselves and their own kind of existential kind of identity. I don't know that I've come across that. I think it's more of a desire to make better. It's a desire to serve our clients. It's a desire, you know, when a manager says, well, but I don't understand X thing, or a leader's like, well, but I don't understand. How do you, you know, what do you mean by making it up? What do you mean by potential? And so we're like, okay, let me tell you the definition. And I'm like, well, how do I communicate with my people? Well, let me give you the framework. And there's this constant desire to, I think it's coming from a good place, but let me give you more. Let me add more clarity. Yeah. Let me add more distinctions. And then all of a sudden you look back and you're like, wait, where did we start? Why are we doing this? And so it's just a matter of simplifying and stripping away some of the corporate-ese, to just again back to that clarity and the simplicity to just make it real.
I wonder if there's a Marie Kondo quality here in the sense of like, if we're going to introduce one, we're going to get rid of something else.
Oh, I love that. But what a great, actually, I have to be honest, like that's a phenomenal, I don't know, hashtag or something like to Kondo, to Marie Kondo, the business world or the it's what a great idea.
It's sort of HR.
I don't know if the bringing you joy concept would go like,
exactly.
Does it
spark joy or not?
Right.
That's funny. You talk about emphasizing the human element. That sort of sounds obvious on its face, but I was wondering if you could unpack that a little bit. Like, what do you really mean by that?
What was the first word? Forgive me, the human element?
The human element, emphasizing the human element.
Yeah. Well, it's people, right? I'm glad that our kind of the world has realized and the corporate world has realized that our greatest asset always ever will be our people. And so what does that actually mean? Right. And you've seen through the years, through the decades, a humanizing in some sense of that experience where we're now talking about things like empathy. We're talking about belonging. We're talking about these concepts that previously just weren't really part of the narrative anywhere near as much. And I think we still have a ways to go in terms of really the things that make people tick and understanding that accessing the highest and best self of people in service of the shared goals we have as an organization, as a business, requires a real understanding of how people work, full of idiosyncrasies and messiness and emotions. I mean, emotions, right? Even that is a thing that previously like, oh, just manage or put them aside or box them in or like in spite of. Well, now we're learning that no, emotions are a critical element of how we operate. In fact, one would argue that the neocortex catches up with the decisions that our emotions make, and then we justify it, right, thereafter. And so what do we do? And now that touches on the change management element that you were talking about. How do we use that for the sake of our people, for the sake of helping them thrive in service of our shared goals, and really embrace all of those elements that make us who we are, especially, I would actually argue, in the age of AI. Right? You're seeing how, and that kind of opens up, I know I saw your body language, a whole different can of worms, but it's not an or in that situation either, it's an and. And so the technology and the speed at which it's advancing and the things that now it's able to do, it really makes us focus now more than ever on what is our role.
Yeah.
As human beings, how do we tap into that? What is our highest and best use? And how can organizations access that and tap into that in this new age that we're in?
Okay, so maybe an unfair question.
Lots of things there, I know.
No, as you think about what our highest and best use is, does your mind go in certain places? Like it's probably going to be found here or there?
Well, it gets down to arguably the definition of what is the thing, what does human mean? I don't know if you want to get that conceptual, but what does it mean? There's an element of creativity,
yeah,
innovation, connecting of dots, decision-making. Mm. And then of course, in other vocations and other, like there is the actual manual things that only for now, maybe people can do or people do best. And that's great too. There's only so much I think that AI can, either displace or challenge in that sense. But it's really, I think, raising that question, and I don't have the whole answer by any means.
I think for me, you used the word earlier, but the word empathy. A machine will never be empathetic to the human experience.
True.
Right? And so if we think about something that Royal Caribbean does, You know, you are bringing people together. You're taking them on adventure, right? You're expanding their horizons. AI can't do that.
We're helping them celebrate life's greatest moments.
Yeah. You know, yes. And so you need to be human to understand what that feels like and then how to go create experiences that create that joy that people find when they're celebrating life's greatest moments. And a computer's never going to figure that out. Because it doesn't feel.
It doesn't feel. I'll go all the way to the extreme. I do think, though, that it's becoming incredible at pattern recognition. Mm-hmm. So in an algorithmic way, dare I say, and that's even becoming old school from an algorithm standpoint, but I do think it can piece together the moments and the likelihood of those being moments where and when. But there's nothing like that human element. That's why that's why I think we're living so much more in that world of experiences right now, right? And it's certainly impacting our industry. People are dying to have those experiences that, especially during COVID, they just were lacking. And so there's a backlog and a desire, as we're seeing, to really want to lean into that. And it's very understandable. So at least for now, those experiences, as you're mentioning, are oh so human. And that human contact is so very important, of course, and the understanding and the empathy and the connection to feelings. It's huge.
No, we are getting a little existential here by accident. I know. I'm going to need more coffee to continue. But part of what you said, AMS, that you're making me think about here a little bit is what does it really mean to be human? Because we're human beings. We're not human doings. AI is doing, right? But we're human beings. Mm. So what does it really mean to be human when you start to separate just the doing part from the being part?
Oh, you know what that sparks in me? And I learned this, shout out to the Trium group right now, from Trium when I was on the team. The cycle of be, do, have, it really does start with being, doesn't it? So what do I mean by that? Most people think that if I only had X, I could do Y, and then I would be Z. Mm-hmm. And in our search of being something, some identity, some aspiration of who we want to be, we often start with what we have or what we don't have to get us there.
Yeah.
But in fact, it's a be, do, have. First, who do you want to be? How do you want to be? And then what are you going to do? And then you will have. This is kind of conceptual, is it? But that's what that sparked to me when you're talking about being. It really is coming together very well.
That's a very powerful concept. So I want to jump into the neuroscience stuff in a second, but one last place I want to stop off at, because in previous conversations we've talked about, you know, that being focused on results, not just processes, and in this elusive seat at the table. And it's not just about having processes and manuals and rules and all this other stuff, but it's actually driving the business forward. Can you share a little bit more about how you think about that?
It really does start with what are we up for as an organization? What's our vision? What's our strategy? How are we going to get there? Processes, tools, systems, all of that stuff are just a means of helping us get there. And at the point in time where they are no longer helpful or where they are arguably, and I think in many places, they're impeding the achievement of whatever goals we have, then we really have to rethink it. And so I think all too often, it's easy with among the noise in the noise that we were talking about to lose track of that goal. Which is why, again, that clarity and that simplicity and the continuous kind of commitment to those North Star goals is just so important. And avoid getting trapped into the process loop of like, because then it just becomes check the box, right? And so many times, and I think employees, and take your pick of the organizations, it's like, oh, it's the time to do X review and I need to check the box and I need to go here and click here and then check the, yeah, and by the end, and have you done that by that deadline? And like all of that stuff weighs it down. Like, what is it actually about? What is a talent review or a year-end performance site? Like, what are those conversations about? How did you do? Did you accomplish what you wanted to accomplish? What can you learn from that? Right. And like, it's just very, in many ways simple, but the processes sometimes get in the way or overshadow
yes.
the goal, such that we lose track of them, and then you lost the script. And so that connectivity all the way up to the business, to what we're trying to achieve, to why, the acumen from a business standpoint, all of those things are so important to maintain that connection.
Yeah.
Connection seems such a light word to say, like the connection. It's like, no, it's the fuel. It's the drive. It's right.
I appreciate what you're saying, because we see this with our clients on the career coaching side, where in the resume writing process, the storytelling, you know, it's how did you actually impact business results? And what people will talk about often is their scope of responsibility.
Mm.
It's like, okay, well, that's interesting. That provides some context, but this is really rude. People get fired for not doing their scope of responsibility. That doesn't actually tell me, did you do something? And we teach people, I'd love for you to react to this, that, you know, if you kind of boiled it down, that either you help the company make money, save money, or mitigate risk. Like the values kind of distill down into those three pillars. And there may be a different, we talked about frameworks a minute ago, but that I mean, like, seriously, you know, because we were able to reduce the time to hire, that allowed us to be more fully staffed, which allowed us to, you know, hit a sales objective, because this part of the business was fully staffed on a ship so that we could, you know, make more money. You know, we were able to reduce the cost per hire or the time to hire, which saved us money because we took it from, you know, it cost $729 to $436 per whatever. Like, do you understand your contribution to business results?
Well, I think that conduit is key. Understanding, well, it's linked to so many things that I want to touch upon. So one of them is purpose, right? If people don't see the bigger picture, if people don't understand what they're doing over here and how it impacts in a ripple, butterfly, whatever you want to call it, hopefully it's not a butterfly, that's a little more esoteric, but if they don't understand what they're doing and how that impacts, you know, our overall business results or mission vision, then it's very hard for them to be engaged. So there's the element of kind of purpose and connection too. I'm sure some of your listeners have heard this, but, and I'm going to botch it up for a second, but there's that whole story about men or people building a cathedral. And somebody walks up, see some bricks ahead of them, and they ask the worker number one, hey, what are you doing here? Well, don't you see I'm putting bricks on bricks? I'm putting the mortar, I don't even know all the words, but I'm putting them together. Okay, great. Go to worker number two. What are you doing? Well, you see, I'm building this building. I'm building this cathedral, and people are going to come in here and they're going to meet and blah, blah. And they go to worker number three. And what are you doing? Well, I'm building a bridge between man and God. Sorry, I always get a little emotional when I say that, but like, what a powerful statement of understanding the ultimate impact of something. And yes. So as you think about that connectivity, it's just so very present, going back to that element of human. Like, if people want to feel valued, people want to do their best, people want to put their best foot forward, and we need to help make sure that clarity and that connection to purpose and mission is there.
Well, which brings us back to your model of who do I want to be?
Yeah.
Right? And is this helping me become who I want to be or not? Just a super quick anecdote on that, your cathedral building thing, which, by the way, I hadn't heard before, so thank you. So I wrote a masterclass on job search called Making Your Own Weather. And I had written bits and pieces of it. And I was trying to do it on the weekends and at night, and it wasn't working for me because that's not my work style. So I just said, you know what, I'm going to take this week off in August and I'm going to bang this thing out. I'm going to be done with it. So I wake up that Monday morning, and this is embarrassing, but I'm not even out of bed yet. I'm like, oh, crap, I've got to write a term paper. I got to write this big thing. And I was just like, oh. And almost instantly, I felt like I got a bit of a head slap. And it's like, no, you get to go help a bunch of people, many of whom you will never meet, right? Find purpose in their job search, learn some things about themselves, have hope, you know, and a sense of autonomy and agency. That's worth waking up for. And I just blew through it. That was like one of the fastest weeks of my life.
That's such a perfect example of understanding, going back to how we work. How we're wired, right? And that ability and that understanding, framing, and reframing and storytelling. They all have something in common, which is like, what is my story? What do I want to believe? There's so many opportunities and so many different options. We can believe a gazillion things. Well, what is the belief that most serves us and in service of us that we want to? And that's a matter of choice, right? What do we want? You had a choice at that point in time. I can choose to look at it this way, or I can choose to look at it this way, which is true. Both are true, arguably. But man, what a different unlock, what a different opportunity there is when you reframe. And this is goes back to neuroscience, right? Reframing anxiety, reframing nervousness, reframing all those things as we're now learning has massive unlocking possibilities. Wow. In ourselves and for others. And understanding that, again, back to a little bit of the science behind it.